Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Every day this week, we're giving away four tickets for the upcoming Leaders Lounge live event. There's a ticket for you and three friends, along with a hamper of goodies to enjoy. It's all happening on April 22nd. A world-class panel of leaders, including Razzy Erasmus, Brian O'Driscoll, Chanel McCoy, Joanne O'Riordan, and Paul McGinley to be in with the chance of winning. Just tell us which former Australian out half works alongside Johan van Graan on Munster's coaching ticket. Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents. We'll contact you after the show. All with thanks to Leaders Lounge. You can check out leadersloungelive.com. The texts continue to come in. The feeling is strong out there on Nathan Murphy and his dilemma. Jamesy says there are grounds for an Ole-style withdrawal of rations for this behaviour. And Obi-Wan says it's like putting blackcurrant in Guinness. Well, indeed. Let's get on to the Champions League. Oh, it was good to have Philippe Auclair with us. Hiya, Philippe.
Good evening to you.
Hansi Flick has said that Bayern will need a mini upset this evening. I would think a bit bigger than mini, no?
No. No, I think a mini upset in terms, in statistical terms, it would be a major upset, because if I've seen it correctly, I think 100 and out of 103 teams which have won away from home 3-2, 95% have qualified. I'm talking in European competitions. Mm. So in statistical terms, you would imagine that PSG, well, it's not you would imagine, PSG is a massive favorite. But we all know that what happened in the first leg was odd, as well statistically speaking. It's pretty unusual that a team that has got 31 shots on goal compared to six ends up with two goals scored against three conceded to start with. And also there are many other elements which make many people in Paris quite, I would say, worried, but a little bit insecure about what's going to happen, especially the fact that this is far from the strongest team that Mauricio Pochettino could have hoped to put on the pitch tonight. Loads of big players missing, especially Marquinhos, but there are others. I mean, I've got the list here. It's I was looking at it. I mean, Fiorenzi, Verratti, obviously, who had COVID, is convalescing on the bench, but not in the starting lineup. Kurzawa, Icardi, Bernat as well. So, which means you've got a defense, particularly for PSG, which is, I think there's one player in the back four that has been chosen by Mauricio Pochettino, who would normally be in the starting lineup, and that's Kimpembe. All the others are plan Bs. So given how PSG was under the cosh the first leg, you can understand why so many people in Paris are a little bit concerned, shall we say, and certainly not taking qualification for granted.
Mm. I didn't get to watch the match as closely as I would like. I'm in here, I'm on studio, I'm on air, but I definitely caught a fair percentage of those 31 attempts which led to the two goals. Why didn't they convert more, to ask a simple question with a complicated answer?
The very simple answer to that is that they didn't have a guy called Robert Lewandowski.
Yeah, that helped.
you see, I think that with Robert Lewandowski in that side, we wouldn't be talking about PSG's chances of qualifying for the semi-final. I think we would be talking about a walk in the park, or a walk in the Parc des Princes, to coin an expression, which actually might be used by a few people tomorrow morning if my fears are, you know, founded, which I believe they are. I think that it was mostly a case of not having the players available on the night who could make those chances, to transform these chances into goals. The one thing that you would say for PSG is that they've got in their side players who are capable of transforming, you know, making goals out of nothing. Mm. And with a huge conversion rate, you know, obviously Kylian Mbappe is in very, very good form at the moment. Neymar is on the way back. We shall see what kind of Neymar we've got tonight. Angel Di Maria is always a very dangerous player. And Julian Draxler has been very often a player who's been a bit, I think, a bit underrated when you think of his performances for PSG. So they've got the arguments going forward, no doubt about that. But it's the rest of the team that is a concern. They've got a very fine keeper in Keylor Navas, who had a fantastic game, by the way, in the Allianz Arena in the first leg. But they will have to be at their absolute best. And it's a thing that really struck me is that the kind of words and discourse I've heard from PSG and people around the club and people in France in general is how wary they are of this return leg. Mm. And there is an element of fear there. And in the past, this element of fear has very often been the greatest handicap for PSG. I mean, they're wildly inconsistent. You know, you cannot tell which PSG you're going to get. Are you going to get the inspired PSG you got, for example, against Barcelona? You remember the 4-1. Mm. We all remember this picture of Gerard Piqué desperately hanging on to the coattails of Kylian Mbappe. Are we going to get the PSG that we saw against Lyon, which won 4-2? Or are we going to see the PSG that we saw actually trembling for a while against Barcelona in the return leg, 1-1? Or the PSG we saw against Nantes or against Lille recently in the league, who were abysmal, yes. Absolutely abysmal.
I saw that actually, which was very interesting. So
yes,
they beat Barcelona 4-1 away and then draw 1-1 at home. And you mentioned that 1-0 defeat at home to Lille, but then maybe their best performance of the season had been the previous month, 4-2 away to Lyon. And Pochettino said this week, I agree, mm-hmm. We've been better away from home. It's something we'll have a look at the end of the season. I was thinking, do you want to maybe have a look at it now? You know, maybe yes. Don't wait. Why?
Yes.
So they're struggling a little bit away from home, struggling a little bit at home for some reason.
Yeah, which is bizarre in this season of all seasons, where honestly, where you play shouldn't make much of a difference, apart from the fact that you have perhaps a shorter trip to the stadium. That's about it. But they've lost also. You're quoting those defeats, but you know they've lost to Manchester United. They've lost to Marseille, which is really quite something to lose against the Marseille of that time. Which was on the third, I think, round of the French league. Mm. They've lost to Monaco. They've lost to Lille. They've lost every time they've been against a rival, an opponent, which had some class, and I would put not away from that. They've lost.
Right.
They've lost. And it's, they've lost, I think, 3 games on the trot at home, which hadn't happened to them since 2009-10. And, you know, stats sometimes are meaningless, but this one is meaningful. It hasn't happened to them for 11 years. And at the time, this was the PSG team which had finished 13th in the league. So not at all the same kettle of fish whatsoever. And which explains the nervousness around this tie, because people saw the first leg and realized it was a bit of a miracle. Now, miracles can happen twice. Lightning can strike twice, can happen. But everybody knows they're going to have to be... the first goal is probably going to be absolutely massive, to use a footballing adjective, on the night. And you can imagine if Bayern were to score first, that it could unravel pretty quickly.
And when they're bad, Philippe, what are the hallmarks of a bad PSG?
When they're bad, as the poem said, they're horrible.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
Well, there you go. You know, showing my British culture here. but no, when they're bad, they're very, very bad indeed. And in fact, you could say that in the first leg, there were moments where they were very, very bad indeed. Mm. And they just it just happened to be one of those nights where you have, it has happened to Manchester City as well in a few games, where a team that possesses the ball and as the lion's share, not the lion's share, it would be the pride's share of the ball, doesn't quite do what it should be doing with it. And also is, you know, in front, confronted with a keeper who is in great form, and a very fine keeper indeed. But they haven't, when they've been bad, I mean, against Lille, they were truly awful. And they lose all shape. They lose their dynamism. The qualities which you saw, for example, not that long ago, on the way to the Champions League final in 2020, they were sometimes, you know, confronted with real difficulties, but they managed to find a way through it. But when they're bad, it just goes. It's just like the wheels fall off completely. It's a very strange, it's a strange team. It's a strange club. And again, I come back to that, which is why after winning 3-2 away from home, you still think that the hardest part of the tie is still to come. And when you listen to Pochettino, it's very much the impression I got when he was talking about the holder of the title is still the favorite. I think he really meant it. It was not just one of these things where you say, oh, we're only, you know, 45 minutes in the tie, you know, something like that. It's there's a real awareness of the fact that they were the inferior side in the first leg. They won it, and they're still the inferior side, and they're a bit shaky about that, especially given, again, the absentees, because everybody's been talking about Lewandowski and Gnabry and Goretzka being doubtful, things like that.
Yeah.
You shouldn't forget that PSG are missing some of their absolute key players. And you're talking about a team which has nowhere near as deep a squad as Bayern has. Nowhere near. I mean, when you look at, you know, the back line is going to be Dagba, who is 22 years old. Danilo, who is a defensive midfielder. I'm talking of the back line here, who will be the partner of Kimpembe, super player. No problem with that. And then the young Abdou Diallo as well. Of this back four, only one player would normally be in the starting 11. One.
Right. And do you anticipate then an evening where PSG, even though they are at home, sit deep, stay organised, try not to concede, and try and sucker punch Bayern on the break again? I mean, it worked okay the last day, I suppose. It's very, you know, it's unbecoming of the champions elect that they want to be, but maybe needs must.
Well, I would also think it's not the kind of setup that Mauricio Pochettino would try to use. I would imagine that he would think of a more dynamic setup, and they can obviously threaten and score goals. And I would imagine that in his mind, it would be better to be on the front foot. One thing that Pochettino has stressed in his press conference, and again, quoting from press conferences, normally you would think, well, it's just propaganda, it's just words, you know, words, words, words. Pochettino is somebody who genuinely tells the truth. When he talks about the necessity to have more possession of the ball, he means it. So I would imagine, I would hope as well, that PSG is going to go for a more proactive, more dynamic approach to the game. Sitting back and inviting Bayern to come is inviting disaster. They won't survive. No way. Absolutely no way. The way they will go through to the semi-final is by being perhaps, again, more proactive and using their strength. They've got fantastic players going forward.
Yeah.
And hopefully as well, they can bring in a couple of the players who are not quite as fit as they should be. And I'm thinking here especially of Verratti, who is a big miss for them, to bring him on later on in the game. If they need to manage it or they need to be able to have more possession, then they will use him. But it's really fraught. It's going to be fascinating, I must say. It's a game that I'm really, really looking forward
to.
Yeah,
listen, you've really sold it. I think we're all looking forward to it now. And Verratti's coming back from COVID, so that's where he is. I suppose the real argument for PSG is for Bayern to go through, they can win 2-0. But then if PSG score one measly goal, Bayern do have to score three. Now that is still a seriously good night for Bayern, or else they can win 4-3 and go through. But 3-2 means a draw and extra time and all that kind of fun and games. And based on the two goals alone we saw the last day, or his goals at the Nou Camp, Mbappe is 8-for-8 for PSG in the Champions League. The most, by the way, a French player has scored in a Champions League campaign is 8. Trezeguet, I think, amongst them. Surprised it wasn't Henri, but Trezeguet was there. So look, Mbappe's in his own private war with Erling Haaland right now, and he's in amazing form. You can't tell me Mbappe's not going to score a goal this evening. I can't see it. Bayern are pretty open at the back too.
I would agree with you. He's in fantastic form at the moment, and he's basically back to his best at the moment. I mean, after having, you know, problematic few months, he's back to his best. You would also imagine that, you know, Neymar could also, you know, I hope he's going to be better than he was against Lille, for example. But they have got those two players. And it's true that if you look at Bayern and you look in this, you know, in their lineup, you would think they don't have players like that. Lewandowski is one in a completely different register, but they don't have this kind of, I mean, super special players. I think Thomas Müller is one, but not in that same mold. Mm. Kimmich is another one, but not in that same mold. As in players who can make things happen out of absolutely nothing. And they've got two. And I would say they've got three, because they've got another half in Di Maria. And don't forget, again, Julian Draxler, whom I think is very underrated, and people who have followed his performances with PSG, very often he's been the joker in the pack, so to speak. Mm. So he could make a difference. But yes, I mean, I would imagine that, you know, we had 5 goals in the first leg. I would say we're going to get more tonight than 5. And that's the thing. That's why what you're saying is absolutely true. If it's 2-1 to Bayern, PSG still goes through. Mm. I don't think it's going to be 2-1, honestly.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. PSG, by the way, someone was texting in asking how they're doing domestically. They're second in the table, 3 points behind Lille. So a little bit of pressure there as well. Unthinkable for PSG not to win the league, I presume, Philippe.
Unthinkable, but there's a genuine chance it might happen. I mean, they had an awful start to the league season when they lost their first 2 games. I mean, they were knackered, basically, after they didn't have a pre-season. It was just ridiculous. Mm. They went straight from the Champions League final to the start of the French season, which, you know, didn't make any sense. But they've already lost 8 games, I believe, which is quite extraordinary for PSG. And it's a fascinating race in which you have Lille up front with this wonderful manager whom I think we might see in a big club next year, Christophe Galtier. And then we've got Monaco, who is my personal favorite for the title. So I put myself across here. Yeah. And Olympique Lyonnais, which is still in the race. And we've got, just checking, 4 teams in 5 points, which is after 32 games, this could make for a very interesting end to the season indeed.
Mm. There's a text in saying, Philippe is a fantastic correspondent. His English is depressingly excellent. And that's not even to speak of your accent either, Philippe. So the plaudits are coming in. What are you saying this evening then? I am telling you now, you can relax. PSG are going to go through. There's no problem here. What are you saying to me? You're a worried man.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate and envy your confidence. That's what I would say. I don't feel that confident at all.
Okay.
And in a way, that's the way I want to be, because this is, you know, We don't have many of those ties, and this one is a little bit special between two teams which on their day can be absolutely magnificent. Both of them are short of their full potential at the moment in terms of the personnel they can put on the pitch, but I still think that PSG will come short. Wow. And when I say that, it's not a double hex. It's just honestly.
No, sure, I believe it.
It's a feeling I've had from the beginning. Even at the end of the first leg, I thought to myself, "This is not going to happen twice. This is not possible." Mm. And if Bayern need to score 5, they will score 5, because this PSG defense, even though they've got a phenomenal keeper, I mean, Keylor Navas has been just magnificent for them. So you could have one of these evenings. You see, I'm contradicting myself, but that's what we love. Mm. And I don't think the defense can hold against this Bayern team, but maybe Keylor Navas is going to just have another of those performances where he does miracles in the PSG goal.
Yeah. All wonderfully unpredictable. Philippe, thanks so much. Pleasure. Enjoy the game.
Thank you.
Philippe Auclair, always great to have him on. So there we are. Kicks off at 8 o'clock. Chelsea against Porto as well. Updates across the evening. Football on Off the Ball. Thanks to Paddy Power for information on responsible gambling. Visit gamblingcare.ie.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Well, the goal of the evening thus far has not happened in the Champions League. Instead, Graham Burke on 39 minutes has scored from the halfway line. A brilliant goal from the halfway line for Shamrock Rovers. They're 2-0 up against Derry City this evening in the Champions League. Still no goals between Chelsea and Porto. Second half's just getting underway in these games. Still no goals between Chelsea and Porto. Meanwhile, PSG, I was saying just before the ad break there, had a 20-25 minute spell where they were sucker punching Bayern on the break. They hit the upright, they hit the crossbar, they had lots of near misses, some saves, and then shock horror, Bayern go and score just before half time. Choupo-Moting, who's enjoying life at the moment, bundled in a header. And so suddenly Bayern, if they can repeat the second half, i.e. a 1-0, then they'll go through 2-0. That's where we are. Now PSG really do look like they're going to score a goal, but stranger things obviously have happened in the Champions League, and no doubt nerves will come into it. That's where we are. PSG 0, Bayern 1, Chelsea 0, Porto 0. Very happy to say it's been a while since we checked in with this man. Stephen Reid is with us. Hello.
Joe, how you doing?
Very well, very well. Coach with Scotland under Steve Clarke since May of 19. As of October, first team coach at Nottingham Forest under Chris Hughton. And most depressingly, as of last month, 40 years old. The big 4-0.
That's a welcome, Joe. Thanks for that one.
How did that feel? Big 4-0. Ouch.
Yeah, it was a big moment. It was a big moment. The missus was 40 around about the same time. And, you know, quite a while ago, we had a few plans this year. Obviously, for everyone, it's been a bit of a disaster this whole period. But, yeah, it's a big milestone. But, you know, hopefully looking forward to the next one in a few years' time. But yeah. Managed to get back, see the family for a day. But then it was obviously, like, you know, straight back to it, especially in that frantic, hectic championship schedule.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're looking good. You're looking good. You can cancel this and just have your 40th next year. I think that's acceptable. I remembered that we had spoken sometime last year around when all of this was kicking off. And I just went back earlier on to have a check and a look back. And it was April 1st, 2020 was when we spoke last year. And it's funny looking back at us. We were like, oh, who knows what will happen, and, you know, we'll get back to normal soon enough, and here we are a year
later.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I think we spoke at the time as well about, you know, next stages of the coaching journey as well. And at that point, yeah, it was, you know, enjoying the role with Scotland, not in any mad rush to get back into the club side of coaching, but, you know, it's been such a strange year, and maybe in a way it maybe helped me refocus a little bit and get back to it and give me that sort of push back into club football. The call came from Chris a little bit out the blue. We've obviously not worked together at club level before, but just had a really good feeling, a gut instinct that this would be a good move, another good learning experience from a top manager that's worked at the top level, a manager that I've respected and admired for a long time, and really enjoying it so far. Although it's had its ups and its downs in the results so far, but it has been good to get back, you know, at the coalface of club football. But it's that balancing act with the international side as well, which is, as you know, been a massive success.
Yeah,
obviously in qualifying for the Euros.
Yeah, an amazing summer ahead. What you said last April was that you were really enjoying the balance of international football and family life. So, I mean, you either got bored or you need the cash. I'm not sure what it is.
Well, I'm actually back now. We got a day off tomorrow, so I've driven back. I've actually got a beer next to the laptop. So managing to try and relax a little bit tonight, but it has been full on. You go from, and I have gone from one extreme to the other. Obviously took this role in October with Chris, straight after the October internationals. Then it was back straight back to the club. Then it was obviously the final of the playoff in Serbia in November, which was amazing. Then it was back to the club. But a couple of weeks ago was crazy in the three games international. So we played Faroes on the Wednesday, drove straight to Nottingham. So was back at 2 a.m. in training ground for 7:30, training as usual, and then travelled down to Cardiff for the game on Friday. So we obviously played Wednesday, then Friday and Monday. So it has been really, really full on. But again, it's been really enjoyable to be at a fantastic club. You can just smell the history, you know, around the club. Mm. Obviously, Brian Clough's the main name that springs to mind, and the images that you see all around the club. But it's been up and down. It was a sticky start when we first went in, but then we had a great run, then a couple of little dips here and there. But at the moment, we seem to be in a pretty decent place, and hopefully have a decent finish to the season before, obviously, it'll be then meeting up with Scotland again.
15th in the table, I checked.
It's obviously not a position that we wanted to be in when we went in at the start, but you know, it's been mixed results.
It must be hard to sense if the fans are happy or not. I mean, like, they're not there. So, I mean, would they be booing you, or would they be happy enough, or what's the expectancy like? Because I know Nottingham Forest were bottom when you and Chris went in October.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. You know, I'm not, and what I do really when I'm involved in full-time football is try and stay off social media as much as possible. Obviously, there's been so much, especially in the last 12 months, in terms of social media and all the things that the companies can do to try and stop the abuse and the negativity around it. So when I'm working and back in full time, I sort of try and stay off it as much as possible, but it's hard to gauge. I think progress has been steady. Obviously, it's going to be a big summer ahead, hopefully a decent end to the season, and then hopefully be challenging next season would be the aim. But you know, one thing's for sure, it's going to be amazing when the fans come back. I've played there as a opposition player, you know, know the atmosphere, what it can bring to a performance, especially at the City Ground. So really looking forward to the fans coming back and hopefully pushing a lot higher up the table than we are at the minute.
And have your family moved to Nottingham with you, or are they still down? I think it's Surrey, isn't it?
Yeah, we stayed put. Okay. We had a big move about 4 years ago back to London, after sort of 15 years away and the kids being born and brought up in Manchester. So we had the big move then, and you know, the precariousness of being in a coaching role or management role is that you just never know. It's a bad run of form or whatever it might be. And I think you find, especially all the coaches and managers that I know, usually the family are, you kind of get your base where the family is settled, where the family are happy, and you work around that. It's not right. Contracts are not as they're not like they are when you're a player. You sign a 3 or 4 year deal and you can kind of plan around that. It's a bit precarious when you're on the coaching side of things. So
not least in the Championship.
Yeah, well, I think the average tenure is around about 12 months. Obviously, we all hope that we're going to be there a lot longer than that, but I think it's important that most importantly that the kids are settled and happy where they are. And it has been tough though, I'm not going to lie.
I saw you do a round table chat with your fellow Scottish coaches. We'll get on to them in a few minutes, but because I thought I had misheard you, but now actually listening to you, you're not exaggerating, because in that chat you said you had spent one night at home in 5 weeks, and I just thought I had misinterpreted that. So you obviously meant one night at home with your family in 5 weeks, otherwise away for the other 34 days.
Yeah, it was an incredible spell of the internationals, of the fixture list in the Championship, because when it is a midweek game, a Saturday, Tuesday, which I think it was for, you know, around about 3 weeks, it's recovery days. You know, the days of every week being a sort of Sunday, Wednesday off, regardless of have gone. These sort of recovery days, you're back in, the players that didn't play have got a training session the next morning. It was a ridiculous sort of spell where it was literally one night at home in that 4 or 5 week period. And at the moment, it's probably home once a week at the moment. And then obviously on top of that, the international trips, which have been a little bit longer with the three games, which it's been in the last few camps, which means another couple of weeks away. But do you know what? That's the benefit of actually having that break that I had that we spoke about, which I've been on and spoken and talked about in taking that break away from football, was that quality time that I had then, that sort of 18-month period where it was the international gig alone.
Yeah.
So I had plenty of time with the kids. We did some nice things. I was at every sort of event, every football match. So, you know, at times you've got to make the sacrifices of getting back in, and the level and the club was just too good an opportunity to turn down. There have been one or two other sort of offers that were made, but with this one, I just had a real, you know, real good, you know, feeling about it. The gut instinct was to go for it. Within a couple of minutes of having that chat with Chris, I just knew it felt right. Mm.
He always seems like such a decent man, and he's clearly a very, very shrewd, good football manager who really knows his craft. You know, probably a little bit underrated in many ways, Chris Hughton, so I can see those ingredients. Does the family man in you feel a bit guilty now, or have you squared that away, or where are you on that?
It's mixed. You know, I think it's also important for the family, the kids, you know, little man, in you know, to see that if you're going to be successful and you want to be successful and get to where you want to get to, it doesn't come easy. So I actually think it's quite a good thing for them not to, in the right possible way, not see me around as much, doing not a great deal in between the international camps.
So you were watching a lot of loose women in your tracksuit bottoms, that's what you're telling me.
exactly that. So no, I think it is something that I tell the kids, look, it's not easy being at home once a week, and having that one day off a week in itself is not easy, because you sort of come home and it sort of takes a little while to decompress in a way, and just relax and chill. And you know, you come home and you're not ruling the roost anymore, or you're not.
Who's in your seat? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You're well down the pecking order, just below the dog at the minute. So I'm well down.
What age are the kids now, Stephen?
14, Isla, and Harry's 12 in a couple
of
days.
So sorry, I thought they were younger. Okay, look, they don't want to see you that much anyway.
No, you're exactly right. It's Fortnite and
sorry, you know, I thought Isla's that I, for some reason I thought they were like maybe a 5 and an 8 or something. That's
no,
a bit
that's okay. Yeah. So during that time that I left Palace a few years ago, that was a great time to be around. It's always a great time, but I can sort of look back on that little period and think, you know, you had your break, you sort of enjoyed it for a period, but that in itself can become quite difficult when you've got a load of time on your hands and the mind starts racing again. Sure. What's next and when you're going to get back in. And so it's fine. The balance is obviously, when you're in football, it's never easy. It's never easy to balance that family and work life, but at the moment, it seems to be working okay.
You've put in a lot of hours. Like, I mean, in terms of your coaching, your 2 years at Reading, 15 to 17, you did a season at Crystal Palace, season at West Brom. Then as of May 2019, Steve Clarke, obviously you got in touch, and now you're double jobbing again. Like, you have really racked up the hours on the training ground and then watching videos, and I know doing scouting reports and the championship treadmill of game after game after game after game. Like, this has been a proper commitment. You are fully committed to this, so like this is no longer dipping the toe. I mean, you want to be a manager, main man at a club, I would think, at some stage in the next 5 to 10 years, certainly next 5 years probably.
Yeah, if I look at it, it's 6 years, believe it, it'll be 6 years this summer since I retired from playing. And the experiences that I've had, you know, I'm so thankful and grateful for them as well. It has been tough, obviously, when I went in at Reading and Steve Clarke got the sack pretty soon, you know, 5-6 months after, and then you're working with different managers. And but I've learned so much in that time, you know, working with different managers, gaining the experiences, championship playoff final, another championship playoffs with West Brom, Palace, the season that we had, qualifying for the Euros with Scotland. Now, you know, I'd like to think a reasonable job at another really big club in Nottingham Forest. And it will have to be the right opportunity some way down the line if it does come. There has been one or two, you know, possible situations where a management role could have been a possible. But
what kind of level?
In the football league, in England. So a decent level, but at the same time, when you're in coaching role and you're going to a major tournament with Scotland and you're in a fantastic role, learning every day at a great club and under a great manager. And, you know, I mentioned to the assistant, Paul Trollope as well, still learning every day. It needs to tick every box.
Yes, because you can be written off if you go into the wrong club, wrong situation, do a bad job. It's so brutal right now, then it could quickly be, well, Stephen Reid didn't work out first time around, so...
Yeah, and it can be your last.
Yeah, he's done.
The stats are unbelievable in, you know, first-time managers that get the sack, whether they get another opportunity again. So it does need to be the... And there's no rush. You know, I speak to so many... No, actually, that's a lie. I don't speak to many in football. I speak to one or two sort of trusted sort of mentors, and, you know, there's no rush, still learning. If you look at Steve Clarke himself, took his first management role at 50.
Yeah. At
West Brom when I was there. So, you know, if it, I'm sure there might come a time, a moment when it ticks every box and it feels right. But, you know, at the moment, to be heading to a major tournament with Scotland and working day to day at Nottingham Forest is... Well, that, feel blessed.
Yeah, and that's it, you know. And you think who's a dynamic duo? You think of like a Mick and Terry Connor. You know what I mean? So yeah. Terry Connor's had an unbelievable football career as well. Like, you know, so I might be even wrong saying, oh well, you have to be a head coach to be anything. I mean,
yeah.
But I get the sense from talking to you that you are trying to build to ultimately being the main man. You would like to test yourself that way.
I think so. But it also depends. Position and situation. Sure. You might find yourself out of work and an opportunity presents itself, whereas the same opportunity when you're in work might not float your boat. But out of work you might take it. How happy you are, location, where is it? I've done quite a lot of the commuting one when I was living in Manchester and working at Reading. Now I'm working in Nottingham and the family are in the other direction in London. So all of those things, you know, will need to be, well, hopefully at a level. You know, I wouldn't want to step out of a top club and, you know, national team if it didn't suit and it didn't tick all of those boxes. So, yes. You know, at the moment, it's just about learning, looking forward to going to the Euros in the summer and hopefully a decent end to the season with Forest.
Do you know why Chris Hughton called you? Who did he talk to? Where did he pluck your name from?
I don't know who he talked to, but sort of getting to know him now, he would have done his homework. We had chats, not about me joining a staff of his at all, but over the years, if he was maybe thinking about signing a player and he knew that I'd worked with him, he would give me a call and we'd have a chat about that player. So it was obviously a trusted, you know, a trusted person that he could contact about that. But, you know, looking at how he does work, he would have done his homework on obviously myself and spoke to a couple of people. And
that must feel good. Really sure. That must feel good. I mean, a few people have obviously given him the thumbs up. Your name in football, I mean, it's a small world, as you know, and your name needs to be good. So he's obviously asked, and it must be nice to think, well, whoever he's talked to has given me a thumbs up.
No, definitely. And I like to think as well, the managers that I have worked under, they're proper football people as well. You know, if you look at Chris and you look at Steve Clarke and you look at Roy Hodgson,
yeah,
to name, you know, those three, they're serious, serious football managers as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm blessed to be and have learned under them and continue to do so. So, yeah, it's no, obviously it does feel nice to be thought of in those terms, mm-hmm. and to obviously get that phone call. That's straight away. I had a couple of others in the course of the last year, but something about this one that, you know, just, I don't know whether it's just that respect that I've got for Chris that was the one that really, really floated my boat and made me make that decision.
Yeah. Well, actually, you think of Chris and you think of Hodgson and you think of Steve Clark. They would all be very respected as decent, even-keeled, you know, good men. they're not getting themselves into bother, you know. As managers, if you had to single out a strength that each of them had, like on the outside, I'd say, well, Roy Hodgson, tactically so well organized, kind of a thing. If you were to just say, well, if you had to pick one kind of key strength that looms large in your mind about each of them, what would it be?
There's a few that run through the three of them, to be honest. It's organization, you know, that's obviously when I was playing and worked under Roy and Steve, you didn't quite see it at the time. You just sort of turn up in a way. I used to speak to him on a regular basis, but it's only when you work underneath and on a staff that you see the bits and pieces that go into training sessions and, you know, the tactical stuff and the videos and watching the opposition, but all similar in that regard. Roy's just got an aura about him due to his experience in the game and the way he carries himself, his enthusiasm. Mm. You know, that's one thing I'd say about Roy. Not that obviously Chris and Steve have both got it as well, but, you know, Roy's into his 70s now and he was still the most enthusiastic person at the training ground about football. Mm. You know, there's even little, you know, sessions maybe on a Sunday morning when we had a small group, whereas, you know, in years gone by, you wouldn't maybe see the manager out there on a Sunday, but he'd be out there, he'd be getting involved. He'd get involved in maybe the little bit that you was doing, but, you know, I'd love seeing that enthusiasm. Yeah. I used to say it to some of the players, you know, the manager's, you know, near on 70 and he shows more enthusiasm than a lot of you. So, you know, Steve, organization. One thing about Steve is you've got some going to get a well done from him. But I used to like that as a player. When I played under him as a player at West Brom, if you got a well done, then you felt on top of the world.
Right.
You know, you got to work hard to get a well done off him, which makes it really mean something. And onto Chris now, he's just an absolute machine at work. You know, the hours that we're doing, he's the first in without fail,
right,
every single morning, and last out of the building. You know, we actually get kicked out by the security on the weekend if we're there after 6:30 at night. We get kicked out. You know, so just, I think that goes a long way. The players and the staff see the manager's car in there, you know, 7 a.m. in the morning, and this is setting off, no word of a lie, at 7, 8 p.m. at night.
And what's he doing? Like, do you need to be in there at 7 p.m. at night?
there's always a little bit more that you can
watch
of the opposition and get prepared. And, you know, the way we work it is we kind of rotate, you know, some of the opposition stuff. And, yeah, there's always a little bit more that you could be watching. I actually feel a little bit guilty now if I was to go in the gym for half an hour thinking there's half an hour you could be watching of, you know, Huddersfield at the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, so that work ethic that runs through all of those three and all of the top managers.
Yeah, they all seem to have it. Steve, come on in. We're watching Huddersfield, the corner routines. No.
We will be.
I'm sure.
Watching the results tonight, what system they've played, you know, who's in and out, who's out. And then we watch the game in full when we get in on Thursday morning and prepare for obviously the 12:30 kickoff on Saturday.
Relentless. Do you think all that really makes a difference? Because I won't name names, but I absolutely know for a fact that some managers at championship level dismiss all of that as like, lads, it's a corner, just get up and try and win it. Don't worry about it. If you're a big lad, mark a big lad. And honestly, they would be of the opinion, you as a management team, you could spend your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday watching all these videos, and actually it doesn't really matter a damn. Obviously, you think it does.
Yeah, you've just got to get the players prepared as much as possible. But you might prepare your team through the meetings for them to be setting up 4-3-3, and you get to the game on a Saturday and they're 4-4-2. They might change it the day before, but all you can do is prepare them as best as possible. But then you might have your markers, and on a Saturday it's a great delivery. The marker you've put on to, you know, mark their number nine loses him, gets blocked and scores. All you can do is prepare them. You can show them the movements of the players they're marking, but ultimately they've got to want to go and get their head on the ball and just be a little bit cute and not getting blocked and recognizing a corner routine. So it is a lot that goes into it now. I can't really, when I was playing, especially at the start, I can't really remember any team meetings or, you know, it was almost a case of when you came on as sub, you say to the player, who is you marking? They say, the number nine.
Duncan Ferguson, mark out.
You just go and mark him. I don't remember all the little details that we get now, but the game's completely changed.
Czech Republic, June 14th at Hampden. England, June 18th, Wembley. Croatia, June 22nd, Hampden. I mean, that's big time.
Amazing. And the actual qualification, I probably liken it to the penalty save from Marshy. I probably liken it to a little bit Robbie Keane's equaliser in 2002 against Germany. Like a single moment in football that just the pure emotion of it was unbelievable. There wasn't really a build up to you winning the game and going through. It was just a single spot kick, great save by Marshy, and you know, the highs and lows of that game was unbelievable. great performance against Serbia in the actual game itself. It was a great performance, and then to the sucker punch of the, you know, header last minute, Jovic was horrible, and then to come back from that and to win on penalties was amazing, and a moment that I'm consciously trying to enjoy now instead of letting it pass me by like most of the best moments in my career as a player. Just pass you by. These moments that come along now, I'm just trying to just stay in it, enjoy it, you know, watch the bits back after, like I, you know, now and again do, watch the penalty shootout again just to relive their moments. But yeah, for it to land this year, two games at hand and England at Wembley, it couldn't have couldn't have fallen any better than that.
No, it almost makes you think it was fixed. You can't say that, I can.
But it could have been Republic in the group as well. That would have really kind of topped it off.
When we last spoke, you said a very interesting thing, that you were doing a counselling and psychology qualification with the PFA. Did you continue that? Have you completed that? Where is that at the moment?
I actually finished the first one. So that was the level two. I was due to go on to the level three, but then got a certain phone call from Mr. Houghton. So that went on the back burner. But it's something that I'm still, you know, I've got a little WhatsApp group with all the guys that took part in it, and one or two of them have opportunities have come up as well to take different roles that can go on it. But, you know, a lot of them are still continuing, and it's something that I want to definitely continue and pursue longer term, whether that's sort of staying in football or after football. I've just always had an interest in that side of the game, the sports psychology that I've used throughout my football career to try and get those, you know, the negativity and the self-doubt, you know, that those self-belief issues from playing, you know, the people that I used to speak to. It's just something that is getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
And is it every bit as much a thing with the current generation? They're not for some reason magically more confident or without doubts, and social media is obviously there as well, which I'm sure doesn't help. Are you seeing some of the same trends, too much worry, not enjoying the big moments, all of that stuff. Is it still the same for the 22-year-olds there now, or are they in any way different to you in your day?
I think it's more difficult now. I think it's harder for them now with the social media that, you know, the vast majority of people are on, you know, the easy access for anybody to just direct message or, you know, write a message on a Instagram picture or tweet is the replies and the abuse that we're seeing. It almost seems like it's every single televised game now.
Yes, it is.
We're reading the day after there's some kind of abuse towards a player.
Yes, and the racist element looms large as well.
Yeah, which is so I think it's become worse. I think how can it not be in a way when, you know, especially for the younger players, I think.
And they do look at it, Stephen, do they? They don't have their agent managing that stuff for them.
I don't actually know on the whole. I'd imagine at a lower level, I'd imagine it would only be the, you know, the high, the top level, the, you know, the ones that have got entourages around them that deal with their social medias. I think in general, it'll be, especially the younger players.
Well, I'd look. If I was 20, I'd be looking.
Yeah, and I had a bad habit of when I played, not that it was social media, towards the back end it was a little bit, but it was, you know, I used to dwell on the one negative, you know, moment of a game. If I had 9 good moments and 1 or 2 bad, for some reason, me being me and how I thought at that time, I'd just dwell on the negative side. And that was without looking at a phone and seeing 10 to 20 negative comments or some abuse. So I think it's a real issue now. And I think players are going to need more and more help as things grow and things go in that direction.
I suspect you're right. It's a weird one, that point you make about 9 good things and you focus on the one bad thing. Because I can see why it's really not a nice place to be in your head then for a couple of days after a game, and I can see how it can affect your confidence and general well-being and all of that stuff. On the other hand, it's probably part of what got you to the heights of the game, you know?
Yeah, I think that. I think, yeah, all the, despite a lot of the time being my own worst enemy, I think at times it worked in my favour in terms of having that attitude of never giving, you know, 10 surgeries, you know, that attitude of never giving up and never giving in to, you know, any of that negativity or, you know, a surgery that might be career ending. I just had the mindset of just not getting beaten by it and going again and going again. It does wear you down. You know, towards the back end of my career, there wasn't too much enjoyment from it. I've got to be honest, in that last couple of years of, you know, some weeks I'd train one day in the week, I'd get the knee drained once a week. It was a surgery, it was more injections, it was a calf strain, it was a small hamstring strain. They all slowly by surely, they took their toll.
Yes.
But that mindset that used to sort of beat me up a little bit, I think also massively helped me in extending my career up until 34 years old.
Yeah. Jeez, you weren't odds on to make 34, I got to say. When you were 28, I wasn't betting on that one.
There was a point where I had in my mind, get to 30.
Yeah, I'll bet.
So it was get to 30, then I was off, you know, then it'd be another year. Then I would sit down with the family. I remember once or twice it was sort of tears, I've had enough, and call it a day. And then one more after a couple of weeks, go on then one more. It's just that mind working, like go again for another year and then
push yourself.
Keep pushing.
Well, listen, it's always great to catch up with you. One of the real gents of the game, and especially given how hard you're working. I mean, these are valuable free hours that you have. So we will leave you alone.
Can I have a couple of beers now, Joe?
You can. Feed up. Watch the last 20 minutes of this game over in Paris and then get into the Huddersfield corner routine and whatever.
I might watch a bit of Huddersfield first.
Stephen, keep up the good stuff. We might nag you, maybe try and grab you for a couple of minutes ahead of the Euros. But in the meantime, have a great season.
Brilliant. Cheers, Joe.
All right, man. Take care. Bye-bye. Stephen Reid there, always great to have him on, a former Republic of Ireland international, of course, now working with Chris Hughton at Nottingham Forest, and very much looking forward to the Euros with Steve Clark coming up. Again, they have Czech Republic June 14th at Hampden, they have England on June 18th at Wembley, and then Croatia June 22nd, Hampden. So that will be something to look forward to say the least. Latest in Paris, it's PSG 0, Bayern 1. I think Neymar has put the ball in the Bayern net, but they're checking it, so it could be an offside there. He generally has been flirting with the offside line all night, as you might imagine. It's been disallowed. It's been disallowed. So it's still Bayern 1, PSG 0. This now gets tricky for PSG. They now concede and it's all over. So tense last 12 minutes there. And still nil all between Chelsea and Porto.
With Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Welcome, Max. So 2-0 to Shamrock Rovers away to Derry City. That is a full time for you. Chelsea, you would think, safely through against Porto, although still nil all on the night. The real drama increasingly is over in Paris, where one Bayern Munich goal now in the last 10 minutes will be very tricky for PSG to overcome. They lead by goal to nil, Bayern. PSG have had so many chances this evening, but increasingly Bayern are having plenty of chances of their own. So 2-0 for Bayern gets it done. Goal for PSG probably puts this to bed, and it's a little bit end-to-end as things stand. So very interesting last 10 minutes there. We're looking for another miracle tomorrow evening, potentially Liverpool against Real Madrid, 3-1 down. Very happy to say the Athletic's Caoimhe O'Neill joins us, also does work with the Liverpool Echo. Caoimhe, great to have you with us.
Hi, are you okay?
Yeah, very well. Been a quiet season for you on Merseyside, not much happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's been up and down, hasn't it? A bit of a crazy one. Not as fans would have expected the defence of the title to go, but obviously, you know, still in the Champions League quarterfinals. So, you know, fingers crossed for a big night at an empty Anfield.
Yes, empty is almost the key word in that sentence, isn't it? You'd give them so much more of a chance if it wasn't so empty.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was there for the Barcelona game and the Dortmund game before that, you know, in the Europa League. And those nights and moments, you know, that they live with you forever. They're just special as something. You know, the ground almost shakes. And I think it definitely shook Barcelona that night. To not have that, you know, is a massive, massive blow for Liverpool. You know, but Jürgen Klopp has said the team are going to try and, you know, emulate that atmosphere on the pitch. So, you know, I think their, you know, fans will be trying their best to sort of will them on through the TV screens and in beer gardens probably as well.
Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, yeah. We're looking on enviously.
Sorry about that. Shouldn't have mentioned it.
Oh, it's all right.
I haven't been myself yet, so don't be worrying there.
Okay. Yes, maybe there's some Uri Geller way of channeling all the fans. I don't know. You mentioned Barcelona. What always pops into my head with that game is Trent's corner, Trent Alexander-Arnold's brilliant corner. It was kind of then you realise, God, this kid is special. You know, he's got so much about him, the quick thinking to match all the technical ability. What an unbelievable last 9 days for him. Kicked off on Monday Night Football and then Madrid, and so much scrutiny from like Ashley Cole showing him how to move his feet, to Jamie Carragher, to just being talked about non-stop, and then scores the goal, obviously, at the weekend. What kind of character is Alexander-Arnold, Caoimhe? Will he be feeling all this and aware of all this, or, you know, in a position to somehow block it out in so much as anyone could?
Yeah, I think he's got great people around him, his family. He's pretty close to them. I know how close he is with some of his teammates, Andy Robertson. You know, they've got their own little video thing on Instagram together. They're really close. You know, there'll be people keeping him on the ground, keeping him away from all that chatter that's just circling around him, because it has become a bit of a sort of media circus almost, hasn't it, around him. And I think he'll just be focusing on his football. You know, he's that kind of player now. Whatever he does from now till the Euro squad is selected, you know, everyone's there's a microscopic lens on every kick of the ball he has. But, you know, from the performance against Arsenal and to go into Real Madrid where, you know, he did make costly errors, and then to sort of make amends a little bit, you know, put in a good performance against Villa. Well, his goal was just, I mean, outstanding. If you've seen the screen grab of all the players and somehow he managed to get it in from there, it was a superb finish. And, you know, that's what he's got in his locker. He's got that quick thinking to get the corner across. We know he's an assist king in his own right. He's got all these qualities. This season's been a lot more difficult for him. You know, it's been well documented that he had COVID to start the season, and then obviously, you know, the injuries Liverpool have had has impinged on squad rotation. And I think, you know, he hasn't quite had that cover there that he has with Gomez and even Matip and obviously Van Dijk as well, who's a massive loss to Liverpool. But I think, you know, he's the type of person, I think, that will deal with this quite well. You know, he posted on social media after his goal against Aston Villa to say, "Are you not entertained?" Which I thought was kind of nice to play into it. He knows people are talking about him, and now he's just got to, you know, keep them talking about him in a positive way.
Well, like, it's been over the top. I mean, I know Carragher and Neville set the agenda, and so everybody talks about what they talk about. And it was a really good chat as well. And then it's unfortunate that Madrid happens the day after. But it's just been non-stop. And you know yourself, like, we have to, the media is always thinking, well, what can we talk about today? Papers to be filled, airtime to be filled here. And Liverpool and their woes have been talked about so much. Like, we don't really need to point out Van Dijk is injured anymore. It's a bad season anymore. So it's just been like this feeding frenzy for the last 8-9 days, because it's just a new angle. It's something fresh. And like, you come on and I'm thinking to myself, so I'm guilty of it, by the way. I'm not washing my hands of it, but I'm like, oh, I must ask Quiva what she thinks of Trent. You know what I mean? But it's over the top.
No, I mean, to be honest, I hold my hands up. I've had a piece published this afternoon on The Athletic, which Alexander-Arnold, as well as a piece on comebacks this morning, which I'm sure Liverpool fans will hopefully find some inspiration from. But, you know, that piece looks at how, you know, defensively he does rank in the top 10 for fullbacks in the Premier League in terms of true tackles and, you know, his tackle rate. Players that, I think the dribble pass rate has gone right down. He doesn't hardly get dribble passed as much as he did last season. You know, his stats are defensively, when you look at them, massively improving. But he makes one mistake and then it becomes this massive thing because, you know, everyone's talking about him at the minute, and I don't think that's probably good for him. But, you know, the stats are there, and I think as well, you know, Liverpool do play the high line, and they haven't been quite pressing with the same intensity in the midfield, and I think that's been costly for them. But not only that, a lot of the times when you look back, you know, I took a look back at performances over the course of the season, and the piece that points out the 1-1 draw against Manchester City away at the Etihad in November, and you know, Jota was getting back, Firmino was getting back, Salah was getting back at times when Trent was further forward or just to help him out. It doesn't seem like that's happening as much. You know, Henderson was always there. A lot of the clips I've watched, you know, obviously Henderson's out injured. So these things, I think, aren't helping him. But it is odd as well when you think, you know, Andy Robertson's over the other side and no one seems to ever talk about him in this kind of way. But obviously, you know, Trent's he plays for England, even though obviously Robertson's the proud captain of Scotland. It just seems that there's just a different conversation around him at the minute. But I think, you know, it is one he's dealing well with, other than, you know, what happened in Madrid last week. I'm sure he'll be, you know, he put it right a little bit at the weekend, but he'll be wanting to get Liverpool through to the semi-finals, especially with, as you mentioned there, that, you know, Chelsea are probably going through. And I think, you know, Liverpool fans would be eyeing up a great semi-final against them. But what a big job they've got to accomplish tomorrow. And, you know, if they're able to do that, that'll go down in the club's history as one of the most famous nights ever. But of course, it's with no fans. So
yeah,
it's quite bizarre.
It's really hard not to see Madrid scoring one, in which case it's near impossible to imagine Liverpool scoring four. Like, it's so hard to see tomorrow. But on their remaining fixtures, so top four is within touching distance. They're 3 points away from West Ham. They have Leeds. They have Newcastle. They have Manchester United away on May 1st, which is their toughest fixture. Then they have Southampton, West Brom, Burnley, Crystal Palace. That's reasonably generous. They won't mind the look of that. What is your sense, Quiva, of where they are? Like, there have been a few false dawns. Is something brewing here and they're coming back into a bit of form? Or are you still as unsure as ever as to what they're going to bring on a given Saturday or Sunday?
I think you got it spot on there. There has been sort of false dawns, and I think the Arsenal game was probably the worst one Liverpool have encountered this season because, you know, it was such an assured performance. They were just passing the ball, threading it through. They looked so confident, you know, and obviously I think that gave them confidence going to Madrid, you know, which has been a happy city for Liverpool fans. Not too long ago. And, you know, I think maybe there was that sort of hope and feeling that the Arsenal game would kind of, you know, kickstart the season in a way. They got some good results before the international break as well. And, you know, they're on a a run of wins now in the Premier League, which feels like such a long time ago it happened. Obviously, they've ended that six game in a row defeat at Anfield against Villa. So, you know, it's kind of up and down, topsy-turvy. I think, you know, going into next season, to whatever happens tomorrow night, you know, they'll be looking to finish top four, I think, anyway, because, you know, Liverpool, that's, you know, you can't win the Premier League last season. And we know, you know, the injuries have been well chatted about. We don't need to do that. But, you know, for Liverpool to be defending champions and for it to have ended maybe outside the top four, I think that's not good enough, is it? Even with all the mitigating circumstances.
No, probably not. Team news will be interesting tomorrow. So I suspect Naby Keita doesn't manage to overcome what happened last Tuesday. What about the front three? That's the kind of interesting one.
Yeah, I think it is interesting. I mean, Diogo Jota, I think, is a fantastic player. You know, he's been Liverpool's signing of the season. He's been a breath of fresh air. With him missing all those months out through injury was, I think, a massive sort of blow to Liverpool as well. But it's an interesting one because going to Madrid, after the Arsenal game, it felt like he'd come off the bench. He got two goals. And I was thinking, you know, where the clock might be tempted to keep him on the bench. You don't want him to be a super sub per se, but you want him to have that impact that he had there. And obviously, you know, he started the game and Liverpool's struggles were there for all to see. So I wonder whether, you know, Klopp might be tempted, even though Liverpool need goals, whether, you know, he sort of keeps Jota in his pocket for maybe the second half to try and change things. But although, you know, you think he might just want all of his attackers on and hope that it does sort of work out in the way, you know, Liverpool can be just, you know, so deadly an attack. But, you know, I think Firmino is such an important player. And, you know, nights like this, I think he'll help sort of stick the ball to him. And you know, the Salah and Mane will continue to feed off him as they have.
And how off the boil is Firmino for you? You know, you're watching him very closely week in, week out. Where is he?
I think, you know, he has had a difficult season and, you know, people will look at his numbers and question those. Maybe, you know, that conversation's always been there about maybe should score more goals. But I think, you know, the job he does when you actually watch him is, like I mentioned there, the ball seems to glue to his feet and then he, you know, people make runs. He makes runs for other players. And, you know, Salah and Mane get a hell of a lot of goals and a lot of them are down to the work of Roberto Firmino. So, you know, I think he's a massive important player to Liverpool. And, you know, maybe his form has dropped off, but I think it's been a sort of collective drop-off. So it'd be hard to sort of pinpoint any sort of one player. I think that's why, you know, we're sort of seeing the conversation around Trent Alexander-Arnold. But, you know, it's a whole team playing the game. And I think, you know, Firmino's an important player on nights like that. And he has stepped up in the past. So hopefully, you know, he can do it again tomorrow night.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. Thanks so much for missing the last 10 minutes of the PSG game, by the way.
I'm sure.
appreciate it. You can read Quiva's work in The Athletic. Quiva O'Neill, thanks so much.
All right, take care.
Cheers. Latest in the PSG game is 1-0 to Bayern. Honestly, chances both ends. I mean, both sides on the brink here in some ways. PSG have had a couple of unbelievably good chances and equally Bayern have gone close. Now, there are literally seconds left. It's just gone full time. Just gone full time. So camera cuts to Neymar and fist bumps and screams and relief, I think. So Bayern win 1-0 is our full time score. PSG go through to the semi final. Presume no drama in the Chelsea Porto game. No, still nil all there. So Chelsea through to the semi finals as well. The football show on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie.
With Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunleary.net.
The OTB Podcast Network.